Sahanavavatu, Sahanau Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Page 14. Sri Muchakunda continued, I have wasted all this time, O unconquerable one, becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury, and land. I suffered endless anxiety. With deep arrogance, I took myself to be the body, which is a material object like a pot or a wall. Thinking myself a god amongst men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, and generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. A man obsessed with thoughts of what he thinks needs to be done, intensely greedy and delighting in sense enjoyment, is suddenly confronted by you, who are ever alert, like a hungry snake licking its fangs before a mouth. You appear him as death. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments, the very proud, a man must die. This will happen suddenly. He is completely unaware, but you are aware, alert at all times in doing your job. As time, you put an end to everything. Suddenly, or beyond logic, you cause death. An example shows the suddenness and alertness. You are like a snake waiting to devour a mouse, or being completely inattentive to remember you, increasingly greedy for objects, longing for objects incessantly for enjoyment. The person suffers on not attaining them. And so one is unaware of the Lord, so therefore time creeps up as death, and just suddenly one's gone. But at the same time as before death, one has so many plans and things one's absorbed in that one gets so distracted by those. Does that make sense? That's why one's unaware. Right? The mouse is busy looking for something to eat, getting more and more, collecting and all that. And because of that, that's why when the snake comes, he doesn't see. Yes.
We see that, for example, in the Hirakasha, you become distracted.
Yes.
And then, if you hear constantly, more or less,
yes,
then you kind of come back to the senses, and
yes,
then you become distracted again. So the idea is to become focused as much as possible, or the idea to renounce worldly things to be able to concentrate on Krishna.
Means ultimately that is there, but renunciation only comes when renunciation is there, but one has to be looking for it. It's just like a businessman can do business when there's an opportunity, right? But he's always looking for that opportunity. But until the opportunity, he's not doing business. So in the same way, as we're looking for opportunities to hear, chant, remember about the Lord, to give up the attachments to the material world. So since we're always looking for that, when the opportunity comes, he can take it. But if he's not, it's like nowadays, it's the popular thing, the Indians will say, oh, that's later in life and things like that, like that. So then they're not looking for it. So later in life, they'll never find it either, because they won't look then either. So if you're always looking now, then one's involved in the household affairs and all that, and sometimes more Krishna conscious, sometimes, like you said, distracted. But because you want to be Krishna conscious, you want to be able to give up the material attachments, that's the whole point. You're engaging them in Krishna's service. That's what's actually going to make for the renunciation. Because renunciation doesn't mean that you can't be dealing with them. The renunciation means the result of them is not yours. You know what I'm saying? Like a cook, if a cook becomes renounced, does he give up cooking? No, he gives up the results of his cooking. Does that make sense?
Yes,
but that's why then that's the point of sadhana. So we're always hearing about it, we're seeing examples of others, we ourselves are trying to apply it, we're associating with like-minded persons, and with this way, slowly, slowly. So the idea is that however early you can start this, the better. So if you can start this at brahmachari life, you know, before, then that's good. If not, then during grihastha life. If not, then by vanaprastha. If not, then by sannyas. Ideally, it's done before you're dead. Because even at death, you see, is like with that example, I think that's fifth canto, where you have it's talking about the Yamadutas and the living entity, I think the forest of material enjoyment or something. So you have this person who's on the deathbed and all the relatives are around. But basically it's, you know, it goes into what everyone's thinking, and it's not necessarily that they all care. They're kind of thinking, you know, when's this going to be over and when will I get everything and things like that. But the person is thinking about, oh, who will take care of this and that, and if only they had a little time more. And so even at death, they're not renouncing. So the idea is that this aspect of doing everything for Krishna then is what one's trying to do. And whenever one can do that, that's the time. So we see Prahlad Maharaj and Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj from the earliest, right from even, you know, from the very beginning. And Dhruva Maharaj then from he was at 5. And then like this, then so many examples as we go through life. Also, Narad Muni, I think he was 6. You know, so you do have that at any time, when they're young, they're old, they're this, they're that, they take advantage. So Muchakunda, he was going through all this and all that, and then only, you know, he then decided to take a nap, you know, wait for Krishna. But only now, seeing Krishna, now it's all coming and that he has to surrender. So the idea is that as soon as possible is what we do, but it's when it comes of its natural accord. That doesn't mean when it happens, it'll happen. We don't mean that. It means, yes, it'll happen, but we're endeavoring for it. We perform the activity, but the results are up to Krishna. Does that make sense? So we work in the field as a grihastha, one works in the field of attachment, but one's trying to give up the attachment for the results from that field. Does that make sense? So when that detachment comes, then it's nice. Because the drive in the grihastha ashram is the lack of attachment. You know what I'm saying? And so all the anxieties come up, all the different things that he said here. What was he saying? Or being completely inattentive to remembering you're increasingly greedy for objects, longing for objects incessantly for enjoyment. The person suffers on not attaining. One gets distracted by that. So when the actual renunciation in the heart, that the results of this are not so necessary, one's actually relieved, one's actually happy. But it doesn't mean you don't continue in the field if it's the duty, and then the duty is favorable for the duties. Because the point is to be Krishna conscious. It's not what you're doing. It's being Krishna conscious while doing it. So it's not that the goal of Krishna consciousness is to give up household life. The goal is to give up material life. Does that make sense? So one can do that from any varna, from any ashram. Therefore, it's not a problem. So if one is going through and one has that renunciation, But the household life is favorable, means everybody's Krishna conscious, it goes very nicely, you know, one has a routine, there's no need to leave it, because it's you're already Krishna conscious, one's already in the ashram. Then as kids grow up, they go away, they get married, this, that, grandchildren, like that, then you start looking that you don't have to do this anymore, because you are maintaining it for the family. You know what I'm saying? And for expanding in the, you know, new grihastha, but when's, you know, a little bit farther down the line, these things aren't so important. So then a few things that you need, this and that, what's important, what's sadhana, traveling, preaching, whatever it is that one wants to do, that's all that one maintains. And all that, you know, fresh, new grihastha spirit, leave that to the kids. You know? like that, and then, you know, one can move on. So whether it comes earlier, whether it comes later, it doesn't matter. If it comes earlier, it just actually makes it easier. Many think, oh, but then you won't be a good grihastha. Actually, they can do very good at grihastha, because now it's just duties. And performance of duties, that's easy to do. Right? And it is peaceful. While doing things because we have attachments and desires and needs, that's actually difficult. We may be inspired and have the drive, but the suffering we go through is very great. Well, if you're doing it because of duties and you're inspired to do your duties because of the lack of detachment, then it's actually easier to do the work. You get more results with less anxiety. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you see that some people all day, all night, they're on the phone trying to make money and this and that. But I've seen sometimes these really big businessmen, when they go home, whenever it is, you know, depending on them, many, you know, some of the biggest ones, 6 o'clock, the phone goes off. Doesn't matter what's happening. You call them in the morning when they get back to the office. Like that. Others then you see is, you know, 9 o'clock it goes off. They won't do anything until 9 the next morning. So it's just they have a cutoff and things are fine. They still make money. Right? Because you don't have the greed. You don't have all these things driving. So it's actually easier. So that they can be with family. They can spend the time. They can relax. Like that. So, you know, so yeah. I say, funny story. Just being relaxed and not getting. What's that? I think it was 92. We were driving with Sahotamarsh, going from Greece on up through the East Bloc, and he had a van because he basically always travels. So the van was you know, the regular little vans, but it was the kind that was kind of set up more for people using it kind of more for living in, you know, like if you go camping. So it had a table, it had, you know, nice big seats in the back. It had the regular driving seats, and I think the seats could convert into a bed, that kind of thing. So it's like a miniature little thing. And so he had the table up and that, and he got out something to drink like that. We were traveling on the highway, and he got out 2 glasses, you know, and got out some drink, you know, like that, poured it in the glasses. Right then the driver, something happened. He had to swerve around something. And the two drinks slid off the table because right there's the door, you know, and you have that step. So it drops down. So it just hits the door and drops down into the step there. And without, you know, getting upset or anything, he just got out 2 more glasses, you know, and poured the drinks like that as if everything was perfectly normal. You know, he wasn't going to get upset because otherwise he ruins his day, you know. And then we just sat pleasantly, drank our drinks and, you know, talked and this and that, despite the insanity going on. So that's, you know, so that's the whole idea, is that there should be you just live your life, and then around that, then you have your occupation and it does its things. But if it's all about the occupation and getting more, like he's saying here, because most of this thing he talks about, I put thinking myself a god amongst men, right? He doesn't say he's a god amongst women, because they'll let you know you're not, right? You know, I think this is Muchukunda. Who is the other one? The Alwar from Kerala, the king? Kulashekara. He makes the point that I sits in the court, and he's the judge, and so people come to him with these different cases, and in some of these cases they're life or death cases. So he's you know whether they live or die is his decision, you know, based on the law and all that. He has that kind of authority. But after, you know, when he's finished the court and he goes into the inner you know apartments where the wife is, then he has to bow his head to you know, the actual Lord, you know, like that, you know. So, yeah. So, you know, chariots, elephants, cavalry, foot soldier, general, discarding, you know, like that. So that's the thing, you know. He gets absorbed in those things, when actually the ashram side is the point where you become God-conscious. You know what I'm saying? So when we talk about material, people generally talk about their varna side. When you see the devotees talking about their Krishna consciousness, they generally talk about the ashram side. Mm-hmm. So does that make any sense? So it's just a matter of up to the individual whether grihastha life is favorable or not. then that's what it does. If it's not favorable and you're not renounced, then you're really stuck. You know, so. Yeah.
That's Janati, sir. Huh? If your wife is not good and you don't have your mother.
Yeah, then you might as well go to the forest, because, you know, you'll suffer less in the forest with nothing. Yeah. You know, the monkeys might bring you something to eat, right? One devotee, disciple of Prabhupada from Gujarat, he was a yogi. And he had learned from, I think, his grandfather how to live in the forest, you know, because we hear about him. So you go there and he builds something in the tree, you know, like a house. But the door is on the bottom, and it has to be, when you sit there, you sleep there on that door. Because you can get in, right, by climbing up the tree, but who else can get in, right? So the tigers can also get in. So you have to sleep on the door. And he said that, you know, with time, getting to know and dealing with everything, the monkeys would bring him food. They go out and collect their fruit and that, like that, they would also bring him. Like that, because he's, you know, he's there. So, yeah, so. Yeah, so that's why it is. The wife's not favorable and your mother's not there, then what's the point? The monkeys will be more friendly, right?
Prabhupada gave another meaning also to the Aranyam Tena Gantavyam. So he broke Tena into Te plus Na. It meant that he should not go to the forest. Home is already like a forest.
He's already in a jungle with tigers and lions. And yes, yes, it goes back to that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because otherwise, if he leaves, then he'll be, he's a bad grihastha, he'll be a bad renunciate. So just like a good brahmacharya will make a good grihastha will make a good renunciate. You know, or a good brahmacharya will be a good. In other words, you have to be good at your area. Good means the mentality, the commitment to it. Doesn't mean that you're materially successful. So that's the hope. Sri Muchukunda continued, "The body that at first rides high on fierce elephants or chariots adorned with gold and is known by the name king is later, by your inconceivable power of time, called feces, worms, or ashes." The BBT purport mentions. Srila Sridhar Swami quotes the following Vedic statement. "After passing through many thousands of species and undergoing great struggle, the conditioned living entity finally obtained the human form. Thus those human beings who still do not worship Lord Vishnu, who can bring them real happiness, have certainly become enemies of both themselves and humanity." Right? Because they'll be an enemy to themselves because they're not getting the benefit, and because of the material desires, they'll give trouble to everybody else. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks, "There is no happiness at death for a person who has lived a life of enjoyment. Even in being a king with all enjoyment, one suffers because of dependence. This is explained in the following two verses." Sri Muchukunda continued, "Having conquered the entire circle of directions," right, because there's the circle Manu gives a name for it. It's called the circle of something, where it means you have your kingdom. So your next kingdom is your enemy. The kingdom after that's your friend. Like that. Does that make sense? Because if you and the next one over are allies, that means the guy in the middle will never attack you. In the same way as then your enemy there, the one on the other side is his ally and your enemy, therefore you'll never attack them. So in this way, all the kings are held in check. So, yeah, that's the method. So having conquered the entire circle of directions, right? So through this, then he slowly conquers and everything like that. And being thus free of conflict, A man sits on a splendid throne, receiving praise from leaders who were once his equals. But then he enters the woman's chambers where sex pleasure is found. He is led about like a pet animal. Right? So he's conquered all the directions. This is the same point that Kulashekar is making. But because of this attachment to sexual pleasure, then the women lead him around like a pet animal. They want him to be here, there. Oh, let's sit here. No, let's don't do that. Let's, you know. So he just gets dragged around by them, whatever they like. And this is the guy who conquers the directions, and those who were his equals before now are his juniors. Yeah. Oh Lord, a king who desires even greater power than he already has strictly performs his duties, carefully practicing austerity and forgetting sense enjoyment. But he whose urges are so rampant, thinking I am independent and supreme, cannot attain happiness. Right? So if you want to increase your kingdom and influence, then you have to be austere. You have to practice austerity and forget about sense enjoyment, because that's where the potency to do that comes from. Right? And but as soon as you think I'm the enjoyer and sit back and enjoy, then your influence gets lost. So you can't have both. That's the idea. That's what's special about Krishna. He has all beauty, you know, all fame, all wealth, all influence, at the same time all knowledge and renunciation. So he's always perfect. He's the source of everything. We do austerity to get his blessings. You know, he is the source. When the material life of a wandering soul has ceased, O Achyuta, he may attend the association of your devotees. Right? So that living entity actually wants to get out of the cycle of birth and death and understand who is Krishna. Then he gets the association of devotees. Right? That's the process. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami makes that point. Is that one wanders through all these species of life, and then when one is interested in actual solution, then you come in contact with devotees. And by that association, then you're able to appreciate the Lord. Then the Lord makes the arrangements. You get the association of devotees. And when he associates with them, there awakens in him devotion unto you, who are the goal of the devotees and the Lord of all causes and their effects. Footnote 11. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns this verse to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukulya Vichara, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. So when we want to know, like this, then you know, when he, or let's say when one's given up that material life can make you happy and you want to know an actual solution rather than jump off the bridge, then you come in contact with the devotees and their association, then you move forward, the interest in Krishna is awoken and it works. How many left-handed people did that? Oh, no, I'm saying you're right-handed, but you were writing like this. Because left-handed people write like this to get it to go that way, you know, leave, so it looks like they're right-handed. But so you're writing so it looks like you're left-handed.
No,
because
I'm writing this.
Oh, I see. I was thinking, okay.
No, you're writing all.
Yeah, I was just thinking, okay. Because at first I thought, she's left-handed. And I thought, no, you're writing with your right hand. Okay. Yes, so this is favorable to devotional service, when we give up that idea to wander around or spend our time in the material world. But the BBT purport states, Acharyas, Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti agree on the following point. Although it is stated here that when material life ceases, one attains the association of devotees. In fact, it is the association of the Lord's devotees that enables one to transcend material existence, right? Because it's actually by the association you get that, but you have, there has to be a willingness for it. That's when you'll take it seriously. Srila Jiva Goswami, and how do you get that? Generally by association of devotees. So there's the association of devotees you get before that you don't actually understand, which is Agyata Sukriti, and when that increases, that comes to the point where you actually take up consciously the association of devotees, are known as sadhu sangha in the process of shraddha, the praying. Does that make sense? By associating with devotees, by their causeless mercy. Then one gets after Sukriti, who comes to Shraddha, that brings you into the serious association. But that association comes from before, like Narad Muni shows up on the doorstep of Maharaj Prachinabarhishat. He didn't wake up that morning thinking, wow, I'd really like to, you know, meet a great sage and like that.
In terms of association, we have formal and informal. So formal, Krishna is most of the time the center of the attention.
Right.
Informal, most of the time it's just joke and, you know.
But it's devotees.
Devotees. And, you know, being relaxed and, you know.
But the point is it's devotees. So if you're appreciating the association of devotees, though it's informal and following, you know, proper dealings and all that in for an informal environment, so it has that comfortableness and joking and all those kind of things. But then one develops that appreciation of devotees. One's value of devotees increases. If that's not happening, then it's not actually a good, how you say, informal association. But if, in other words, if you can associate on that comfortable level with devotees and still maintain, you know, one's appreciation, then that's just the finer points of Vaishnava association. Does that make sense? So it's not a problem, because then you're appreciating devotees and this and that and how to deal and everything, and so you're having to apply what you've learned. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sometimes the difficulty comes is that devotees appreciate the informal part, but the formal part they can't digest because it's about Krishna and it's more intense.
Yeah, so it'll just take longer. But if they at least maintain the appreciation of devotees and deal properly there, then slowly, slowly they'll come forward. Like that. I'm not sure if he got initiated. Prabhupada had a disciple. It was, I mean, disciple, whether he got initiated or he was just like a Siksha disciple in Calcutta. I think his name was Dhruva. No. Dhruva? Debu. Right? Isn't there a Bengali? None of you are Bengalis. Okay, you don't know. I think his name was Debu. And then he may have become Dhruva, but he would just come around and basically informally hang out with Prabhupada, because he was a Calcutta boy, Prabhupada was a Calcutta, you know, from Calcutta. So they just talked stuff like that. But he'd always love to come around, do service, anything needed in Calcutta, you know, that you need, he would go get it, because he knew where to get stuff, because the Westerners would just get schlock, you know, so like that. So he would go and get, and, you know, it's really nice, but maybe he would just informally hang out with devotees. I don't know that he ever really attended classes and all this formal kind of stuff like that. You would generally see him later in the day. I can't remember so much, but I kind of remember it. He would show up later, in the, you know, like after at breakfast or after breakfast time like that, and be there until the evening and all that, and then go home. You know, especially when Prabhupada was there, he'd always be there, and then he would show up a lot of the times, you know, in between also. But it was always informal, but because of that, he was inspired in devotional service. So the formal aspect in that, he may not. So as long as there's something they like, you know, maybe they don't like the formal things like that, but let's say they don't mind a kirtan or an abhishek or a festival, or so that they just keep associating, then slowly, slowly, that the heart will get purified and they'll be able to move forward to more dynamic. It just means it'll take longer. But if that affection has grown to such a degree, then at the time of death, they might remember the devotees and this way get benefited. If not, then they'll move forward at some point next life and, you know, take up the path. So as long as there's something about devotional service that they appreciate, devotees or chanting or kirtan or prasad, you know, like the dogs, they like prasad. Not much into any of the other practices. But from that, then they get great benefit. You know? So in that way, that's good. But if they could do more, is better. But the point is, someone should do how much he can do. And the more stable you can make that, the better. So if they can only do a little bit, but they do that regularly, that will gradually increase. Is that You know, and if they can now and again do something more, then that's what festivals are for. You do more. But they're occasionally. So, the BBT purport states, we were there. Srila Jiva Goswami explains this apparent inversion of sequence by quoting the Kavya Prakasha 10.153 as follows. Karya, karyanayos, no, karanayos, cha, paur, vaparya, viparyaya, vigyayati, sha, koti, sya, sa. So you can tell this is coming from Kavya because it's really hard to say. Because they'll use these very fine. You see also how they're like reversing on the words. We should get one of those. How you say? You know, they have those air cans and they put the horn on it, and then we have a sign. You know. And then when they're there, then we honk the horn, they'll all turn and look and put up the sign. Having some fun. The other areas, they do that same kind of voice on that when they're joking in that. Yeah, so it sounds the same, just a different language. Okay, I thought it was just Bengalis, but everybody does that kind of joking. Okay. A statement in which the logical order of a cause and its effect is reversed should be understood as atishayokti, emphasis by extreme assertion. Srila Jiva Goswami cites the following commentary on this statement. Karanasya sigra karitam vaktum karasya purvam uktau. To express the swift action of a cause, one may assert the result before the cause. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that the merciful association of the Lord's devotees makes possible our determination to become Krishna conscious. And the Acharya agrees with Srila Jiva Goswami that this verse is an instance of atishayokti. Right? So is that by the association of the devotees, but it's actually the devotees, it's through their association that you get this. But at the same time, we see that the Acharyas also mentioned that for the serious development of that, then is through the association of devotees. So it's by devotees, you take up Krishna consciousness, by devotees, then you perfect Krishna consciousness. So to emphasize this, then he's reversed it just to make it, you know, to point it out. Yes.
So the cause and effect formula works both ways.
Yes, because you can see the effect, the cause in the effect. So you can start with the effect and then go to the cause. But it's just you want to bring out that, so then you see it in both places. But it's just a matter of bringing it out. So it's a poetic way of approaching it. Yeah. Mucha Kunda continued, "My Lord, I think you have shown me mercy since my attachment to my kingdom has spontaneously ceased. Such freedom is prayed for by saintly rulers of vast empires who desire to enter the forest for a life of solitude." Yes.
I mean, he slept for 20 something DBUs, and now he said that he's attached.
It seems to be 27 DBUs.
20 plus. Now he says that he's attached spontaneously seen.
Because now that he's seen the Lord, because when he woke up, he didn't seem to have lost his attachments. But now seeing the Lord, now these attachments have spontaneously gone. So that's what he's saying, by your mercy, then that's there. So the Lord went and gave that mercy because he's the devotee. And Krishna knows he was waiting for it. Like that. So that's why then he went down that way. And by going, he went there actually to visit Muchakunda and give him his mercy, but at the same time he could also get rid of Kaliyavana. Okay, such freedom is prayed for by saintly rulers of vast empires who desire to enter the forest for a life of solitude. O all-powerful one, I desire no boon other than service to your lotus feet, the boon most eagerly sought by those free of material desire. O Hari, what enlightened person who worships you, the giver of liberation, would choose a boon that causes his own bondage? Because if you take anything else other than that, then you get bound up again. You know, it's like the lady who would go to the forest to collect sticks, and she made a bundle one day, it was too big, and it fell off her head, so she's crying and you know, to Krishna. But it was so sincere and so absorbed that Krishna appeared, and then he asked, what do you want? At that point, she could have asked, you know, for her pure devotion. She just asked if he could put the bundle back on my head, and so Krishna did. And then he immediately disappeared. Then she understood. Right? So, yes, one should avoid that one. Therefore, O Lord, having put aside all objects of material desire, which are bound to the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness, I am approaching you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are not covered by mundane designations. Rather, you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, full and pure knowledge, and transcendental to the material modes. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. In this verse, Muchakunda clarifies his desirelessness for all objects of the world. Having given up relation with sattva, raja, and tamagunas, I also give up liberation related to sattva guna, which causes jnana. I pray for bhakti, which consists of service to your lotus feet, which is beyond the three gunas, right? So liberation and that desire there is still connected with goodness, because it's still about ourselves. It's not Vishuddha sattva. That's only bhakti is Vishuddha sattva. Technically, it means actual Vishuddha sattva. Just like the guys, the jnanis for liberation, then they come up to the platform of Vishuddha sattva, but it's not permanent. So their liberation is not actually permanent. Neither is the Vishuddha sattva. So actually, only devotees are actually Vishuddha sattva because that's permanent. I pray for bhakti, so bhakti is beyond the modes. Jnana is still within the modes of, you know, has goodness in it, which means there's a mixed touch of passion and ignorance, while karma is more in passion and ignorance. Though it may be performed from the platform of sattva, because that's the best platform. Right? So the karmis, the jnanis, and the bhaktas perform the duties that are defined by sattva. But because the devotees do it without material desire, it's Vishuddha sattva. The other two, it's still sattva. Right. Does that make sense? I pray for bhakti, which consists of service to your lotus feet, which is beyond the three gunas. The 11th chapter of Gita states that bhakti is beyond the three modes. I attain vrajami, you as a person, purusham. The Supreme Lord said, but some say that my form as a person is Brahman covered by Maya. Muchakunda replies, no, you are without the gunas, nirguna, without covering, niranjana. Right? Because Maya means it's the modes. But he's transcendental to the modes. Therefore, Brahman can't be covered by the modes. Right? They're saying that they can be covered. But the point is Brahman can't be covered. Because if Brahman can be covered, then if you merge back into Brahman and then Brahman becomes covered by the modes, then you're here again. So what was the whole point? You know? So The Supreme Lord said, yes, but I may be without gunas, but some people say that my body is made of the gunas. Which Kunda replies, you and your body are not different, advayam. Right, because they'll say is, yes, the concept, the Supreme is there. So they only see the impersonal, but the body, they think that's illusion. But actually, the body is the source of Brahman. Right, it's his effulgence. Because that effulgence that said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about that, the Brahman effulgence expands from means it's from Krishna, but it expands, you know, where you manifest through Vasudeva, you know, the Lord of the Jnana Shakti. And Brahman's also explained as the effulgence of Krishna's good qualities. So then that has the aspect of coming there, because Prajumna is part of the Sambandha. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? Didn't get that catch. Because Prajumna is the aspect of the qualities. Right? So then that's part of Sambandha. And the Jnana Shakti is the Sambandha aspect when we're looking at Jnana, Kriya, and so then that's the Sambandha aspect. So that's the place where the Brahman effulgence is from. Does that make sense? And so it's the qualities that are there in the Prajumna aspect that make it. Does that make sense? Plus you have the mechanics of Sankarshan. But they're generic, they're not specific. He's the Lord of the Jnana Shakti. Balaram's the Lord of Kriya. Krishna's the Lord of Icha. Yeah, does that make sense? In that layout, when we're talking about that aspect. You know what I'm saying? So there's always some connection there. It's just that it's if you have a formula that's so simple but it includes everything, means it's quite sophisticated. So, you know, every few years you figure out something more about it. So, you know. Means Krishna revealed.
Vasudeva is the Lord of Jnana Shakti, Balaram is the Lord
Kriya. And Krishna Icha. So in other words, it's like how you say? Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita, they're the three Prabhus, because those are the three. Krishna, Balaram, and Mahanarayan or Vasudeva. Because then from the Mahanarayan comes the whole Vaikuntha scene. The whole material, you know, and then that's one side, and then from the other you got the Purusha avatars. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So in that way then Balaram's mood is that of Vaikuntha, and the Purusha avatar Sankar, that other aspect comes to the Purushas. Mm-hmm. So then you get that. So then Mahavishnu is then representing that line. Nityananda represents the other line, and then Lord Chaitanya is Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. And so who do you learn from? Who's the teacher in these three? Advaitacharya. Yeah. The Supreme Lord said, "What is the nature of that body?" Meaning his body that is non-different. Muchakunda replies, "It is Chit Surup, Brahman." Another meaning, because the world is made of your energy, it is not different from you, Advaya. But you, by your Surup Shakti, by your Surup Shakti, are a body of pure knowledge. So, even though the material world is him, and so in that way it is, you can say it's his body, but still his body, by his Surup Shakti, is then different again. That's why Krishna says he is everything, but he's still separate. Sri Muchakunda concluded, "So for so long I have been pained by troubles in this world and have been burning with lamentation. My six enemies are never satiated and I can find no peace. Therefore, O giver of shelter, O Supreme Soul, please protect me. O Lord, in the midst of danger, I have, by good fortune, approached your lotus feet, which are the truth, and which thus make one fearless and free from sorrow." Right? So if you surrender to Krishna, then one becomes fearless. Why? Because there's nothing more that you want. And so fear is there because you can't gain something or you may lose something. Right? So that means fear comes from not identifying as a servant of Krishna. That's where fear originates. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments, "First you can enjoy all objects worthy of enjoyment, and then I will give you service to my feet. Fearing such enticement from Krishna, Muchakunda offers this prayer." Right? Because otherwise they said, no, you're king, you first go on, do all this, and then... You know. being afflicted by miseries in the conflict with Indra's enemies, desiring victory, burning with repentance, such as, "For so many days I have not worshipped the Lord," with no cessation of the desire for enjoyment of the six senses of eye, ear, nose, tongue, skin, and mind. I do not get peace either by my own intelligence or by knowledge given by others. If enjoyment is given by you yourself, even then I will become entangled. That is the nature of enjoyment, because one will get absorbed in that. One gets distracted. That's why then for Brahma, it was a very important thing that Krishna said, you can perform your duties here, but you won't get distracted. So that's an important aspect. So he's just saying, better we don't get involved. Therefore, do not give that enjoyment. O Paramatma, who resides in everyone, who therefore knows everything, I have taken shelter of your lotus feet. In material treasure, there is fear of sickness and enemies, etc. In heavenly treasure, there is impermanence. In the treasure of Brahman, one is cheated of service to your lotus feet. Right, so, that's it. Material there's fear of sickness and enemies. In the heavenly, then you don't have the problem with the sickness and all that, but there's impermanence. It doesn't last that long. In the treasure of Brahman, one is cheated of service. So you have the thing, it's eternal, but you don't have service. Right. But the treasury of a lotus feet are without fear, abhayam, without impermanence, ritam, and without lamentation, ashokam. Impermanence. So that's the meaning, you know, of the six kinds of occupations. Then you have rita, where you go out and just glean. And then if you have more than you need, you give it away. So that's practically applying this impermanence, you know, as an occupation. And without lamentation, I shall come. Therefore, protect me who am inflicted with calamity. Protect me at your lotus feet. Verses 58-63. Krishna awards benedictions to Muchakunda. The Supreme Lord said, O Emperor, great ruler, your mind is pure and potent. Though I enticed you with benedictions, your mind was not overcome by material desires. Right? Because the point is this, do they really want Krishna or they want something else or something else and Krishna like this? So, because if Krishna is going to give himself, it has to be someone who only wants Krishna. Because you can't give yourself to somebody who wants something else also. That doesn't work out very good. Understand that I enticed you with benedictions just to prove that you were not to be deceived. The intelligence of my unalloyed devotees is never diverted by material blessings. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the material qualities are three, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. Then one is placed into the mixed material qualities of passion and ignorance, of when various kinds of greed and lusty desires impel him to try to find comfort in this material world. When situated in the material quality of goodness, one tries to purify himself by performing various penances and austerities. When one reaches the platform of a real Brahmana, he aspires to merge into the existence of the Lord. But when one desires only to render service unto the lotus feet of the Lord, he is transcendental to all these three qualities. The pure Krishna conscious person is therefore always freed from all material qualities. The Supreme Lord continued. Right. So then you have lust, you have greed, and then you have the mode of goodness with the penances and austerities, so that can all sit you at different places, you know, according to karma and jnana. But then bhakti situates you above the modes. The Supreme Lord continued. The minds of non-devotees who engage in such practices as pranayama are not fully cleansed of material desires. Thus, O King, material desires are again seen to arise in their minds. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. The vivid example of verifying this statement is Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni was a great yogi who practiced pranayama, a breathing exercise. But when he was visited by Menaka, a society woman of the heavenly planets, he lost all control and begot in her a daughter named Shakuntala. But the pure devotee Haridas Thakur was never disturbed, even when all such allurements were offered by a prostitute. Right. So does that make sense? So both in the same situation, then one is allured, one's not. So when one takes up devotional service, gets situated in that platform, one's not distracted. But even when situated in goodness, controlling the breath, you know, so many things, one has so many mystic abilities, but still one can get distracted. Yes.
So can we say that the mode as a carrier, not necessarily carries the object in the same mode, would be completely different?
Yes. It says, see, it's you have what mechanics you're using. Then you have what intent you have from it.
Yes.
So, you know, as we're talking here, if we're talking about those who are pious, we can situate ourselves in a lifestyle of goodness following the recommendations of Scripture. Then we can use that for karma, you know, and be on that Manomoy platform, for jnana, and to be on the Vijnanamoy platform, or bhakti on the Anandamoy platform. So that's the whole thing. Understand? The Supreme Lord continued, "Wander this earth at will with your mind fixed on me. May you always possess such unfailing devotion for me." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, "This statement by the Lord confirms that a person in true Krishna consciousness, engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord under the direction of the spiritual master, is never subject to the contamination of material qualities." Right? So that's how we want to situate ourselves. Right? The Supreme Lord continued, "Because you followed the principles of a Kshatriya, you killed living beings while hunting and performing other duties. You must vanquish the sins thus incurred by carefully executing penances while remaining surrendered to me." Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, "In this statement it appears that although Kshatriyas are allowed to kill animals in hunting, they are not freed from the resultant contamination of sinful reactions. Therefore, whether one is a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Brahmana, everyone is recommended to take sannyas at the end of life, to engage himself completely in the service of the Lord, and thus become freed from all sinful reactions of his past life." Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds, so means they're not the result of contamination of sinful reactions. Does that make sense? So it's not that for killing those animals and hunting, if it was done according to the rules, they don't go to hell. You understand? They don't have that aspect, but because of doing that, it there's a contamination. You get the contamination of the sinful reaction. Does that make sense? So it'll affect the consciousness. So he's saying, therefore, he should then, you know, wander the earth and in this way perform his austerities, free himself from that contamination. Does that make sense? Srila Vishnu, so the best, you know, for us then is chanting, you know, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities, five main things, they're the greatest purifying element. So the more we're steady in that, then the more we get purified of the contaminated consciousness that's there from the, all the, whatever it is, unlimited lifetimes before this. Right? So the process is such that you can, in one lifetime, get rid of it. Right? But we should be determined, we should be focused.
What is the reason why he had to take another birth to remove this contamination? And just by the darshan of the Lord, this contamination of this hunting and all didn't go away in this lifetime of his.
You can't say how quickly or slowly something will go. You're like Bharat Maharaj, then it took three lifetimes. Like that. And you see others one lifetime. So it's you know, up to the mercy of the Lord, but also the focus of the devotee. And you have also the great devotees who establish, who set the example. You know what I'm saying? Because so we know that it, how it works and what to look out for. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur adds, Mutrakunda thought, oh, then do you want to separate me from yourself? No, you should not do that. Do not do that. Seeing Mutrakunda's great anxiety, Krishna then considered, in this avatar, he should not associate with me directly. My associates, such as Arjuna, Yudhishthira, Uddhava, and Krura, appearing at the end of Dwapara Yuga, seeing you here for the beginning of the Manvantar, will laugh when they see your huge form so different from themselves. Right? Because he's from Treta Yuga, he's big. Right? And in the pastime of fleeing Jarasandha, kidnapping Rukmini, and fighting with Jarasandha and Salva, etc., you will not be suitable to be with me. You will kill them all like mosquitoes. Like Jarasandha is just like, you know, kind of like, you know. Because depending upon what on the calculation or how it's working, then they could be twice as big or they could be 10 times. So sometimes it says each one that reduces by 10. So whatever the height is now, they would be 10 times that in Dwapar, 10 times that. They just get bigger and bigger. Or it's double. You know, so like this age, it's, what do you call it? You know, you're like 6 feet, we're taking that. Then you see in Dwapara, then it was the average, it's around, you know, it's like 12 feet. Though I've heard that Bhima was more like 18. He was a bit bigger. So therefore, you know, he's a big, powerful Kshatriya. Then you could imagine he'd be big for Treta Yuga. So even if they're double that, you know, he's 36 feet tall. You know, it's like, you know, where will he go? He'll bump his head on everything, right? You know, so, yeah. You know, so you know, it's like with Bhima, then you can have a fight, and it's a whole thing. But you know, with him, it's just he reaches over and picks him up and squishes him. You know, that's it. You know. Is that so? You know, it won't go as smoothly, right? You can imagine him out on the battlefield. You don't need Arjuna; just one of him. That's it. You know. So. You will kill them all like mosquitoes, crushing them in your two hands. But then, what reason should I give to separate from me? After thinking like this, he said something a little false to mislead Mutrakunda. Thus, he speaks the next verse. The Supreme Lord continued, O King, in your very next life, you will become an excellent Brahmin, the greatest well-wisher of all creatures, and certainly come to me alone. The Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. A Vaishnava is a first-class Brahmana because one who has not acquired the qualification of a bona fide Brahmana cannot come to the platform of a Vaishnava. When one becomes a Vaishnava, he is completely engaged in welfare activities for all living entities. The highest welfare activity for living entities is the preaching of Krishna consciousness. It is stated herein that those who are specifically favored by the Lord can become absolutely Krishna conscious and be engaged in the work of preaching the Vaishnava philosophy. Srila Sanatana Goswami. So that's why he said it's false, because in the next life then you'll become an excellent Brahmana, but as a Vaishnava, he's already technically an excellent Brahmana. Right? Srila Sanatana Goswami concludes, in your next life endowed with pure bhakti, your desire will be fulfilled. As a Kshatriya and as a king, according to those impressions, now you do not have friendship with all beings. You will become a Brahmana. Brahmanas by nature are friendly to all beings. Being friends with all beings, one becomes a jnani. Being a better friend of all beings, one becomes a devotee. Being the best friend of all beings, one becomes a pure devotee. Endowed with natural compassion, distributing bhakti, you will be inclined to help all beings without motive. Right, so he's pointing out here he'll become a Brahmin, he'll become the topmost. Because if a Brahmin is good, an excellent Brahmin means then Vaishnav. So he's able to be that pure Vaishnav who then by his preaching, his teaching, his example, then others will be able to be delivered from the material world. When one is face to face with the sun, there's no longer darkness for one's eyes. Similarly, when one is face to face with a merciful devotee, who is very peaceful and surrendered unto the Supreme Lord, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.10.41. Right? So therefore then he'll become such a devotee. You'll be an Ekanta Bhakta, or you'll be the best among Brahmanas, since you will be an Ekanta Bhakta. Therefore you will shine and be the best friend of all beings. you will attain only me, not my vibhutis. Or existing alone with special pastimes, you will attain me closely. You will directly serve me. Right? So it's not about the opulence, it's about that being nice and that association with the Lord. He speaks in this way to produce steadiness in order to purify the devotee completely. By being born as a Brahmana, his faults as a Kshatriya, mentioned in verse 47, will be uprooted. Or this is arranged to accomplish the perfection of his great devotee, as in the case of Narada. Tapadi pascha samskari navejya karma karaka arta pascha kavid vipro mahabhaga vatottama. The greatest devotee Brahmana undergoes the five purificatory rites, navejya karma, and is known as arta paschaka, Padma Purana. Krishna does not reveal his relationship of Gokul, and by knowledge of Narayana and hearing his glories, gives Muchakunda faith. It would be unsuitable to reveal anything in the cave, where details could not be seen clearly. So he's not revealing at this point. So he'll go, he'll perform his austerities, he'll preach. That way he'll take up a Brahman position, the Brahman, he'll do more preaching, because he is such a great devotee. You know, if that focus, then Krishna would like him to do some preaching.
In
this life and the next life.
I
bet, you know, he can discuss Krishna consciousness with the others. So that's why we see then from that cave, it appears he went up to the Himalayas, where up there they won't think it's strange that he's so big, because there's other people from other ages there. So, yeah. Conclusion. The pure Krishna conscious person is always free from all material qualities. When one is placed in the mixed material qualities of passion and ignorance, various kinds of greed and lusty desires impel him to try to find comfort in this material world. When situated in material qualities of goodness, one tries to purify himself by performing various penances and austerities. When one reaches the platform of a real Brahman, he aspires to merge into the existence of the Lord. But when one desires only to render service under the lotus feet of the Lord, he is transcendental to all these three qualities. Right, so the pure devotee is always free from these qualities, because being situated at the lotus feet of the Lord being free from all these qualities, then one is not under the control of these qualities. Krishna controls the qualities, so as you surrender to Krishna, then Krishna calls back the influence of Maya. Does that make sense? So it's just showing mechanically how that's working. So we're not just saying it because it's a nice thing to say, we're saying because that's actually how it works. Yeah. Chapter 52, Rukmini's message to Lord Krishna. Pratigya, one should be strongly determined in Krishna consciousness, and that is the way to ultimate success. Chapter 52 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikit asked Srila Sukadeva Goswami questions 1023 and 1024 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 1023. The Supreme Lord married Rukmini, the beautiful-faced daughter of Bhishmaka, in the Rakshasa style, or so I have heard. Question 24. My Lord, I wish to hear how the immeasurably powerful Lord Krishna took away his bride while defeating such kings as Magadha and Salva. Srila Sukadeva Goswami addresses these questions in the second half of the chapter. The Supreme Lord asked the Brahmana question 1025 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whence have you come, crossing the impassable sea, and for what purpose? Explain all this to us if it is not a secret, and tell us what we may do for you. The Brahmana addresses this request from verse 37 onwards until the end of the chapter. The rhetorical question uttered in verse 38 does not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, running as if in fear, went to Dwarka. Then Lord Krishna heard the message of Rukmini from the mouth of a Brahmana and chose her as his wife. King Muchakunda shown mercy by the Lord Sri Krishna, offered obeisances and circumambulated him. The king then left the cave and saw that humans, animals, trees, and plants were all smaller than when he had fallen asleep. From this he could understand that the age of Kali was at hand. Thus, in a mood of detachment from all material association, the king began worshipping the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari. Sri Krishna returned to Mathura, so then it must be that also it goes down. So if Arjuna and that was 12 feet, they must have been bigger at the beginning of Dwapara. Just like now, if they're like 6 feet, at the end of Kali Yuga, they'll only be 3 feet. Right? And just like we say people are 6 feet, there's people who are shorter. So when they say 3 feet, there's people who are shorter. Right? Yeah. Sri Krishna returned to Mathura. No, where were we? Thus, in a mood of detachment from all material association, the king began worshipping the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari. Sri Krishna returned to Mathura, which was still under siege by the barbarian army. He destroyed this army, collected all the valuables the soldiers had been carrying, and set off for Dwarka. Just then, Jarasandha arrived on the scene with a force of 23 Akshauhinis. Somehow he likes 23, which is good. So 23 times 17, that's a lot. Yeah. Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, acting as if fearful, left their riches aside and ran far away. Because Jarasandha could not appreciate their true power, he ran after them. After running a long way, Rama and Krishna came to a mountain named Pravarshana and proceeded to climb it. Jarasandha thought that they had hidden inside a cave and looked all over for them. Unable to find them, he built fires on all sides of the mountain. As the vegetation on the mountain slopes burst into flames, Krishna and Balaram jumped off the peak. After reaching the ground unseen by Jarasandha and his followers, they returned to the Dwarka fort, which floated within the sea. Jarasandha decided that Rama and Krishna had burnt to death in the fire, and he took his army back to his kingdom. At this point, Maharaj Parikshit asked a question, and Sri Sukadeva Goswami responded to it by beginning to narrate the history of the marriage of Lord Sri Krishna and Rukmini. Rukmini, the young daughter of Bhishmaka, king of Vidarbha, had heard of Sri Krishna's beauty, strength, and other fine qualities. And she therefore made up her mind that he would be the perfect husband for her. Lord Krishna also wanted to marry her. But although Rukmini's other relatives approved of her marriage to Krishna, her brother, Rukmi, was envious of the Lord and thus forbade her to marry him. Rukmi wanted her to marry Shishupal instead, right? So Krishna's enemy. But she doesn't want to marry that than someone who is inimical like that. Rukmini unhappily took up her duties in preparation for the marriage. But she also sent a trustworthy brahmana to Krishna with a letter. Right? So she was taking up in case it goes that way, but at the same time, she did make her arrangement like that. So this is then the arrangement of Prajapatya, where the girl, through her offices, makes the arrangement. Does that make sense? Because generally the parents would make the arrangement. Either they go through, contemplate it, work out some arrangement. So that's the Brahma, yes. Then when it doesn't happen like that, but the father is performing some, you know, particular ceremony and that, and the Brahmin who's performing it, he finds that he's suitable. So he didn't actually look, but, you know, then he arranges that. The Prajapati is then when the parents aren't able to make an arrangement. The girl, you know, finding a suitable person, then through her people, then she arranges it. It's approved by the parents, of course. But she makes the arrangement because they couldn't find. So in this case, then they found, but then it's not going to happen, so something else is arranged, so therefore then she's arranging it herself. Does that make sense? But it's still based on knowing what you're doing. It's not that, oh, he looks cute, and it's not that one. That method. When the Brahmin arrived in Dwarka, Sri Krishna properly honored him with ritual worship and other tokens of reverence. The Lord then asked the Brahmana why he had come. The Brahmana opened Rukmini's letter and showed it to Lord Krishna, who had the messenger read it to him. Rukmini Devi wrote, "Ever since I have heard about you, my lord, I have become completely attracted to you. Without fail, please come before my marriage to Shishupal and take me away." Right, because something else was arranged, and for him to marry, it has to be, it can't be any of these other rites, because those are all the parents' arrangement. Right, even if a boy comes to the family and asks for the daughter, like that, still the parents approved, and then the ritual is performed. Right, so all these four, then the common point is the parents' approval. Does that make sense? Yeah, but in Rakshasa, it's not necessarily... approval is there or not, just the girl is taken. Right? So here, she wants to go, so therefore then he arranges. Just like with Arjuna, then he was interested to marry Subhadra, but he only wanted to marry if she was interested to marry him. She didn't want to, you know, that the element of the Rakshasa rite and kidnap her if she wasn't interested. Right? Because otherwise it didn't work out so good for Bhishma Dev. Right? Yeah. Rukmini unhappily took up her duties in preparation for the marriage, but she also... Oh, no, we already read that. "Without fail, please come before my marriage to Shishupal and take me away. In accordance with family custom, on the day before my marriage, I will visit the temple of Goddess Ambika. That would be the best opportunity for you to appear and easily kidnap me." So even she's giving the solution, like she's arranging the whole thing. "If you do not show me this favor, I will give up my life by fasting and observing severe vows. Then perhaps in my next life, I will be able to obtain you." After reading Rukmini's letter to Lord Krishna, the Brahmana took his leave so he might carry out his daily religious duties. Shloka Anusharana. Verses 1 to 4. Muchukunda engages in austerity. 5 to 14. Krishna and Balaram flee in fear. 1544. Rukmini's message to Krishna. Verses 1 to 4. Muchukunda engages in austerity. Srila Sugadev Goswami said, "My dear king, thus graced by Lord Krishna, Muchukunda circumambulated him and bowed down to him. Then Muchukunda, the beloved descendant of Ikshvaku, exited through the mouth of the cave. Seeing that the size of all the human beings, animals, trees, and plants were severely reduced, and thus realizing that the age of Kali was at hand, Muchukunda left for the north." Okay, that's your cave. Yes. Okay. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, "Seeing the trees and plants were small, he went north to the ashram of Naranarayana, where Kali had no influence." Right? Also, Naranarayana wouldn't have a problem with the size, because they're probably big, because they're Satyuga wallas. Right? You know, so. "As long as Krishna, the husband of Lakshmi, touched the earth with his lotus feet, Kali could not subdue this planet." Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.30. "It is thus understood that while Krishna was present, Kali had no influence. But understand that he would not remain on the planet for a long time. He went." Right? So it's just at hand, but it won't happen until Krishna goes. So he figures that it's not going to be a long time, therefore he'll go north. Srila Sugadev Goswami continued, "The sober king, beyond material association and free of doubt, was convinced of the value of austerity. Absorbing his mind in Lord Krishna, he came to Gandamandana mountain. There he arrived at Badrikashrama, the abode of Lord Naranarayana, where, remaining tolerant of all dualities, he peacefully worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari by performing severe austerities." Verses 5 to 14. Krishna and Balaram flee. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by Yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of barbarians and began taking their valuables to Dwarka. As the wealth was being carried by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's protection, Jarasandha appeared at the head of 23 armies. O king, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's armies, the two Madhavas, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away." Interesting, the two madhavas. Oh, I see. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Krishna and Balaram, born in Madhu's dynasty to perform various pastimes, accepting the activities of humans, ran away. This is the pastime of the Lord of the universe, who has qualities like human beings. He released unlimited weapons on his enemies. He causes creation and destruction of the universe. He is enthusiastic to destroy the enemies. He follows the dharmas of human beings, creating allies with weaker parties. He fights with the strong. He sometimes conciliates and sometimes creates dissension. He sometimes punishes the enemy and sometimes he flees. In this way, he follows the actions of humans. The pastimes of the Lord of the universe take place by his will. So in this way, he tastes all these different varieties of the Kshatriya duties and pastimes that are there. Just like as a cowherd boy, he does all those varieties. Now as a Kshatriya, they do all those. Yes. But how are these dead bodies dead bodies? Yes. And so is it a glory for a Kshatriya to die in battle? So that means they're purified. That's how they go to the heavenly planets. So therefore, then it's not a problem. If he was run over by a Mack truck, then you might consider. But, you know, like that.
But that's what the Germans did also in the camps. They would take out the teeth of the dead ones.
Well, I guess you would work on the principle that if you're dealing with those who are chosen, then you don't have a problem with the contamination. But you see, as even then they took all that wealth and all that, were they able to keep it?
No.
No, it ended up in Switzerland and they had it. Right? And then if anybody's getting it back, it's those who are descendants of those whose teeth were pulled out. Right? So, yeah, so that means if you get things by unlawful means, you can't keep it. And one devotee, he was mentioning that his grandfather was a minister for one of the kings. You know, this is before partition. But then I think with the partition and all that, whatever, when that was happening and everything was being lost, then he took a lot of that wealth. But because it wasn't actually legally there, then, you know, he had some, then the son, then as the grandson, it's gone. And so he said they didn't have money, and then the parents were explaining it's because of this, or the grandfather was explaining. Because it wasn't legally obtained, therefore, is that, you know, so that's the way it works. I say, ill-gotten gains, you know, are always lost. Yes.
It's an interesting strategy that Krishna has. He kills 13 million Yavanas, then he runs away from Jarasandha.
Yeah, we'll see if the Acharyas give some reason for that. Because he's just tasting the various kinds of things. Because he destroys everything, or he runs away, or he does conciliation, or he punishes and chastises. So any of the different things he's using. Because of the things, you have those four main, but you also have the six. You know, that's why he says he makes alliance with those who are weaker, and then you make alliance, then you march, then you fight. You know, but then retreat is also one of them. So this one, he's tasting retreat. You know? So, yeah. In this way, he follows the actions of human. The pastimes of the Lord of the universe take place by his will. Okay, today is?
Friday.
Okay, so on Monday then we'll hear why he ran away. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.